Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
It is clearly now the will of the Parliamentary Conservative Party that there should be a new leader of that party and therefore a new Prime Minister.
Politics in general has taken total leave of its senses.
Changing one man at the top of the Tory party won't make any difference. It won't fix the problems. Let's have a fresh start for Britain. Let's have a real change of government.
You're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And good afternoon, I'm Caroline Hepke. Coming up on today's programme, we'll be speaking to the Conservative MP Bob Blackman. He's Joint Executive Secretary of the newly elected 1922 Committee.
And we'll talk to Will Tanner, former advisor at Number 10 and director of the think tank Onward.
But first, on Monday night, the 1922 committee set out the process for electing the new Tory party leader. Candidates need the backing of at least 20 MPs to enter the race. Here's Graham Brady, chairman of the committee, on the timeline.
I would hope that we will do it relatively quickly. We will have the first two ballots this week and then begin ballots next week, probably on Monday. And it may be that we reach the final two at that point.
Well, the current favourite looks to be the former Chancellor Rishi Sunak. He's gathered the support of Transport Secretary Grant Shapps and Deputy Prime Minister Dominic Raab just this morning. Andrew Bowie is also backing Sunak.
He has been tested in the heat of a crisis. He was the person that led our financial response to COVID, and he's the person that I think can take us through the situation that we're facing as a country right now, reuniting the country, recovering the economy and leading this country forward.
Meanwhile, the current Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi is also in the race. Brandon Lewis MP has defended Zahawi's decision to run.
What Nadeem did, I think, actually shows the strength of his character and actually how genuine he is. He and the Prime Minister have known each other a very, very long time. And he was one of those who went to see the Prime Minister on Wednesday and talked to him about the situation and was very clear with him. And I think that shows the strength of character.
Meanwhile, Labour expected to call a vote of no confidence in the government today in a bid to force Johnson out of office, though with a Tory majority of more than 70, it stands no chance. Well, joining us now is Conservative MP Bob Blackman, who's also Joint Executive Secretary of the newly elected 1922 Committee. Bob, thanks so much for joining us on Bloomberg Westminster today. Now, is 20 MPs the right hurdle to set to get into the race? Do you think there's a risk of excluding too many candidates?
No, I think any person that wants to be Prime Minister, leader of the Conservative Party, needs to command a reasonable degree of support amongst Conservative MPs to start with. The reality is, of course, that we've got to balance the two issues of speed to get to a point whereby by Thursday week we have two candidates to put to the party membership at large in a postal ballot. Versus, obviously, the desire to have as broad a spread of candidates as is possible. So what we agreed is obviously a threshold to start with, and then after the first ballot will be tomorrow on Wednesday. Any candidate to get through to the second ballot will need to get 30 votes or more in order to qualify. So anyone that gets less than 30 votes will be eliminated. So we've got two thresholds really to start with. After that, I suspect, we'll be in a position that we will have the right sort of field for MPs to whittle the list down in what will be another vote on Thursday and then votes on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday next week, if we need them, to get down to the list of two candidates.
Bob, how many candidates do you think are going to just get through today? Because obviously we've had 11 declare. We've still got a lot of campaigning, organising to do just today. But what do you think by 6 o'clock is your estimation of how many initial candidates we're going to see?
Well, there's been, last week we were talking, you know, about 16 candidates possibly being in the ring. Today we are obviously saying that at the moment 11 candidates have declared. There are other candidates who were thinking about standing. I don't know if they're still continuing or not. But I would expect to see at least 10 or possibly 11 candidates on the ballot paper tomorrow.
Gosh, that's a fair number. Are you comfortable that Tory party members who are old, white and more than 60% male are the right people to make the final decision? The modern Tory electorate is the modern Tory voters are quite diverse, aren't they, in terms of many of them live in the north of England, many of them are working class, and your members generally are not.
Well, the interesting thing is, of course, that membership has been on the increase over the course of this year, which is good news for the Conservative Party generally. And I haven't looked at the profile recently of the new members, but I can tell you, obviously, new members tend to be younger people. So we are attracting people from a more diverse section of society, not only younger people, but people from different ethnic minorities. So that's the good news, I think, for the party at large.
But they are still mostly older and southern based, aren't they? And mostly male.
It's actually quite spread out. I mean, it's quite you'd be quite surprised, I think, when we have the figures around the level of membership and the type of people. I've been very pleased to see, you know, that mixture of people being recruited. I mean, the other thing is, obviously, from our perspective, we're choosing the leader of the Conservative Party, who then will become Prime Minister by virtue of the fact that the last general election, we commanded a clear majority in Parliament of Conservative MPs. And so, under our unwritten constitution, the position is that the party that gets the most MPs puts forward their leader as to be the Prime Minister. And that's the way historically we've done it. It continued with Theresa May when she was Prime Minister, and obviously with Boris Johnson when he became Prime Minister. So from that perspective, there's no difference between the way we've done that in the past two leadership contests and the one that we're doing now.
Yeah. And just on that point of, interesting, in terms of membership, at least according to Queen Mary University, 6% of Conservative Party members at the grassroots level are aged 18 to 24, for example. So I think that's why we wanted to clarify that issue. Look, do you think that so far at the contest, is it fair to say that it's gotten pretty dirty pretty quickly in terms of, you know, Nadeem Zahawi's finances, Preeti Patel admitting attacks on Rishi Sunak's record? I mean, fairly quickly it's become a pretty aggressive competition.
Well, it's aggressive, and I hope that candidates that will look at the positive aspects of what they have to offer, as opposed to attacking each other. I mean, that frankly doesn't do anyone any good, and doesn't portray individual candidates or the party in any great shape. What we want to be concentrating on is the fact that we've got a good swathe of candidates representing various different strands of opinion within the Conservative Party. So that's good news. So people can put their point of view quite clearly. And okay, I think what matters now is that people should be positive, not concentrating on attacking each other. Because at the end of the day, we're going to have that from Labour going forward. And, no one's listening to them.
Well, the issue, though, is that there's going to be 6 weeks of campaigning where the two final candidates are going to tour around the UK in the midst of a cost of living crisis, soaring bills, the possibility of Russian gas being cut off and hitting the UK, and also strike action across the summit. That's going to be a disastrous look for the Conservative Party.
Well, I think the reality is that we've got a time frame now which elects a new leader by the 5th of September, when we return to Parliament after the summer recess. Whoever is elected will be constructing their government, and the government will be taking things forward. Obviously, between now and then, Boris Johnson will remain as Prime Minister and will be taking or straining every sinew, I'm sure, to ensure that we reduce the impact of the cost of living challenge that we've got at the moment. I absolutely sympathise with the fact that people have got their problems. But what we've got to try and do is make sure that we deal with that issue, but at the same time elect our new leader, giving our members the opportunity to hold those individuals to account and decide which one of those two candidates they want to see as both leader and as prime minister, and then taking us through to the general election, which will follow in a couple of years' time.
Well, will Boris Johnson be straining every sinew? He said that he won't make any major policy decisions, and surely, you know, this 2 months is a long time, and a lot of people are incredibly troubled by the soaring cost of living, and we have what is effectively a lame duck prime minister. Wouldn't it be better for somebody to stand in his place, perhaps Raab, the deputy PM?
No, because then you've got a lame duck deputy prime minister, and the argument doesn't flow. Obviously, what's happened is that the position now is that Boris Johnson as prime minister has got the support of his cabinet. The reason why Boris Johnson is stepping down is he lost the support of his cabinet. He's got the support of his cabinet to act in a caretaker role until the new leader is elected. That's very important because it means that government will continue and the action that's required to support the economy and support people going forward will continue until the new leader is elected, and whoever he or she may be can make the decisions that we need to make.
Nadeem Zahawi, his own chancellor, told him to go.
Sorry? Several members of the cabinet obviously took the view that the time was right for the prime minister to step down, advised him as such, and therefore he took that very difficult decision. I mean, who wants to be in that position? But he made that decision, and then the members of the cabinet have gone back into cabinet on the strict understanding that the prime minister will step down when the new leader is elected.
Do you think the new leader will have a good understanding of the concerns of northern working class Tory voters?
Yes, absolutely. I think they'll be well versed in that, and we have some excellent MPs from across the north of England who will certainly be able to put that point of view to the new leader and to the new government, because obviously whoever is the new leader is going to construct that cabinet on the basis of the whole of the England and Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, the whole of the United Kingdom, as opposed to just looking internally at a Westminster-centric bubble.
If we know who the leader is by September the 5th, on September the 6th, will there not surely be pressure for there to be a general election to give legitimacy to that new Prime Minister?
I'm sure there'll be pressure. There always is pressure from the opposition to hold a general election. But I think possibly people should remember that when Gordon Brown was elected as Labour leader after Tony Blair stepped down, he didn't hold a general election for some 3 years. Similar terms when David Cameron stepped down, we didn't have a general election when Theresa May was elected. And when Theresa May stepped down and Boris Johnson stepped down, we didn't have an immediate general election. So, yes, there'll be pressure, but the reality is that we need to get on with the job. We've got a majority in Parliament of 75 at the moment. Clearly, that's a working majority, and we were elected in December 2019 to fulfil a manifesto. And I should imagine that the leader, whoever he or she may be, will be wanting to deliver on that manifesto and demonstrating to the country our increased level of competence and restoring confidence in the people before we ask the people for a new mandate.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Well, Ewan, things are moving ever so quickly, but at the moment it looks like Rishi Sunak, Penny Mordaunt and Tom Tugendhat have most of the MPs publicly declaring for them. And so joining us now is Will Tanner, who was an advisor to Theresa May in the Home Office and also as Prime Minister, and is now director of the think tank Onward to help us think about these candidates and their policies and what they're coming out with. Will, welcome to the programme.
Thank you for having me.
So what do you make then of this field of candidates? We were speaking to Bob Blackman. He said he thought that there would be 10 or 11 by the end of play today.
Yes, I mean, it is a wide field of candidates, both in terms of kind of number, but also in terms of the breadth of political or ideological point of view represented. You have people firmly from the right of the party, like Liz Truss and some others, and you've got people like Tom Tugendhat, who's very much a centrist, and others such as Penny Mordaunt and Rishi Sunak, who represent a kind of more modern or moderate conservatism. So it is a wide field, a kind of grand national race, as it were, but I would expect that to narrow quite considerably as the first few rounds of voting happen over the next few days.
What's your broad take on the policy that's been discussed? A lot of it seems to centre around tax cutting. Maybe that's not surprising when you're appealing to a Tory electorate. But what's your take on which parts of the party are making the running here?
Well, we have started this race focusing very clearly on, I think, what the candidates think MPs and, to some extent, Conservative members want to hear, which is a desire for tax cuts and putting money back into people's pockets. You're hearing Margaret Thatcher's name invoked quite a lot by several of the candidates. However, I wonder whether or not the contest will continue to focus on that territory. It was always going to be a kind of key part of some people's pitch. People like Liz Truss have made a big virtue of their belief in reducing the size of the state in the past. But actually, you're starting to see a bit of a fight back from those who believe that conservatism is much more about fiscal discipline, about balancing the books, about not promising tax cuts that you can't necessarily afford as a country. And with inflation rising as it is, I think you may well see this contest focus more on how do you tame some of that inflationary pressure in the economy? How do you get the economy back to growth before you start cutting taxes? And actually that, I would argue, is the real lesson from Thatcherism in the 1980s. She was never someone to propose kind of unfunded tax cuts that couldn't be funded either through spending cuts or through growth. So I think the kind of tax cuts narrative may well wane over the next few weeks, and we may need to see more policy issues coming through.
Yeah. Onward, as a think tank, embraces, as you put it on your website, being a modernising think tank of the centre-right. But you've tweeted out, quite interestingly, that there has been a lot of talk about the right of the Tory party and the appeal of these candidates. But you actually say that the person that unites One Nation Tories could also be a formidable force. So again, it's the kind of split. Who do you think is going to end up as the last two on the ballot? Will it be a kind of One Nation Tory versus a more hard right Brexiteer? What is your view?
Well, I don't know, and we don't have very long to find out, so I'm not going to speculate. But I think the media tends to, and actually politicians themselves, tend to focus very heavily on the right of the Conservative Party. It's the bit of the party that makes the most noise. It's the bit of the party that has been most problematic in Parliament over the last few years, especially if you think through the kind of Brexit crusades. But in number, I've never been convinced whether or not that wing of the party actually has as much weight as it kind of proposes in public, as it kind of presents to the outside world. And we may well see, I think, the moderate ranks of the Conservative Party coalesce around a candidate and prevent the right from having a candidate in the final two. Now, my view is that this contest has to be a proper battle of ideas, and the Conservative Party can't end this contest without having had a kind of serious debate about who it is for, what it stands for, what the values of conservatism that they want to present today. So in some ways, I think that might be a mistake and could be a shame. But what's interesting is I think actually the number of candidates or number of MPs supporting candidates from the moderate wing is substantial. I mean, 84 candidates supporting Kemi Badenoch, Jeremy Hunt, Sajid Javid, Penny Mordaunt, combined, and that's quite a significant number of MPs, and that could push someone through to the next round just in and of itself.
Johnson won his majority almost entirely by winning traditional Labour seats in the Midlands and the north of England. Have you heard anything from the candidates which would appeal to them? And regardless of that, is the winning candidate going to put forward, are they going to appeal to those northern voters, is what I really want to ask.
So I think the key test for this leadership race is whether or not the winning candidate can bring back together, can assemble that coalition that the Conservatives brought together in 2019. There are lots of myths perpetuated about that coalition. They are actually not a kind of libertarian, tax-cutting kind of Conservatives that some people would like them to be. They are actually overwhelmingly in favour of paying more taxes in order to fund public services like the NHS and better schools. They're very pro-aspiration and supporting kind of opportunity, and that's why the levelling up agenda is so important. So I think there is an interesting policy case to be made for winning over that coalition that currently I don't think is being made by any of the candidates. And the kind of initial focus on tax cuts has slightly prevented those voters from getting their kind of hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've heard nothing of levelling up, of spending on education catch up, on the NHS or military spending, for example, all of which, you know, one can imagine would be pretty important in the groaning in tray of whoever becomes the next Prime Minister. Look, I think mulling over Boris Johnson's tenure, though, in number 10, the fatal flaw also of Johnson's government, to me, appears to be that he prioritised loyalty over competence. Competence comes up again and again. Do you think that feature is likely to remain with anyone who takes over at number 10? Or are we going to get back to actually putting people in the job who are best suited to delivering?
I think it depends on who the winning candidate is, to be perfectly honest. There are certainly some candidates in this race who place great store in competence and would pride it over loyalty. And I would argue Rishi Sunak, Tom Tugendhat, Penny Mordaunt are some of the candidates who would, I think, represent that view. There are, I suspect, other candidates who, either because they have been close to the kind of Boris project, which I think I agree, put loyalty above competence in many respects, or because they are simply kind of keen to shore up their ideological wing of the party. There are other candidates who, for whom that might not be the case. I think that would be a mistake. The last few years have done enormous damage to the Conservative brand for efficient and effective government, which I think the public generally do think of conservatism in those terms. And I think one of the key kind of question marks for the new leader is how you can restore some of that reputation for competence after the last few months. So I think that is an important part of this contest. At the moment, it hasn't been a big part of the debate, but I suspect it would do, especially in the final two.
Will, what would a Rishi Sunak government look like in terms of ideology? Clearly, it would attempt to, as you put it, restore that reputation for competence. And Sunak is clearly thought of as a better manager than Boris Johnson. But in terms of the drift of ideology, where would that Sunak government be placed?
Well, I think Rishi Sunak is an interesting politician because he kind of grew up in politics as a small state Thatcherite, really, in many respects. He has made lots of arguments for lowering taxes, and I think he does believe in reducing taxes, but not from a kind of dogmatic point of view. I think more in terms of giving people more of their own money and allowing people to make choices about their own money. So it's a kind of principled position. But he is also the Chancellor who obviously introduced furlough and oversaw massive expansion of state spending during the furlough scheme. So he's clearly not someone who is narrowed or hindered by ideology. He's willing to be pragmatic when it counts. And I think that does actually herald a potentially quite different type of conservatism to the one that he prosecuted when he was a backbencher. I think it is a type of conservatism that is willing to see the good that government can do and the kind of backstop nature of the state to provide people for security when it counts, but also not wedded to the state in the way that you might think of a Labour government, for example, as the only mechanism of delivering opportunity. So I think there is something interesting there. It's not yet fully fleshed out, and his leadership pitch today will, I think, set out that in greater detail.
So potentially, economically, that's not that different to Boris Johnson's conservatism, is it?
I think the issue with Boris Johnson's conservatism, well, clearly the point of disagreement between them over recent months has been I think Rishi Sunak's steadfast determination not to increase borrowing in order to fund higher spending or tax cuts, whereas I think Boris Johnson, to coin his own phrase, wanted to have his cake and eat it and effectively rip up the fiscal rule book. And Rishi Sunak, I think at his heart, is a kind of Lawsonian or kind of Thatcherite politician in the sense that he believes fiscal discipline and not spending more than you can afford is the most fundamental rule of politics. And so I think that's the key difference between them. But you're right that it does represent an evolution in conservative economics. And it actually, in some respects, takes us back to before Margaret Thatcher, where the Conservative Party was not as known for kind of small state ideology and was much more pragmatic in the way it both kind of taxed citizens and businesses and spent money. It was a kind of different type of politics.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.